The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
So, my next guest is well known to many for his part in the long-running RTE series Operation Transformation. He's a clinical psychologist and an associate professor at the UCD School of Psychology. Dr. Eddie Murphy, you're very welcome to the show.
Morning, Dermot. Thanks so much for talking to me.
Yeah, great to talk to you, Eddie. I'm really just getting you on so that you can analyse me. Have you got 2 days?
Time is of the essence, they say.
Yeah.
Well, the 50-minute hour is a classic therapy hour, is the 50-minute hour. There's a phenomenon called the handle on the door. And some people come in, and I remember one person talked to me. He talked about some people are browsers, seekers and buyers. So people come in and they're sort of checking you out and stuff like that. And then just as they're about to leave, say, there's just one more thing, Eddie.
I find that actually very relatable. I think as a bloke, we're probably more likely. I know I've done that in, say, a GP's office, you know, where you go in, you go, oh, yeah, grand, yeah. No, everything's okay, yeah. And then as you say, hand is on the handle of the door and you're like, oh, yeah, I forgot to say my leg fell off. And I guess you notice that from a psychological sense, people are holding off till the pressure's on and they know they have to leave.
Yeah, I think, though, in fairness, it's about the relationship. And like any therapist or psychologist will talk about that, the engine to change or the engine to supporting an individual and caring compassionately is that the relationship that you form creates that engine for change, as it were.
Do you find it hard to be compassionate, you know, client after client? I know that you do a lot of work outside of the one-on-ones these days, but particularly when you were doing more of that work, how do you keep the empathy, keep the compassion alive when you're on your fifth client of the day?
Well, I think compassion is an area of huge interest to me, actually, compassion and kindness. And there's self-care, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but there's the whole area of compassion and care. Now, when you think about compassion and care, think about a pilot, right? A pilot will go into a plane and they'll ensure, like, aircraft and maintenance is all about safety. Mm. And when it comes to the work of a psychologist or teacher or parent or, people that are in the human industry, as it were, the social care industry, they give of themselves. So how do you give of yourselves in a compassionate way and ensuring that it's not stressed so much that it's got burnt out or whatever? So I think there's partly, for me personally, good relationships around family, friends, physical activity plays an important role, doing some personal therapy as well, and doing some supervision. So there's there's different strands to ensuring. And I think there's a pacing as well required. There's a level of pacing in the work that you do to try to support yourself, to nurture yourself, to be able to support others.
When you say pacing, is that, you know, I suspect maybe in your early years, you're like, give me all the clients, I can take all the clients. And then over time, you learn what your balance is, how many different people you should be sitting in front of per week, for instance. Is that the case?
So I go back to go forward a little bit, Dermot. Mm. So in the 80s, I emigrated in the 80s in 1985, and I went over to the UK, and I trained originally as a general nurse. I actually knew nothing about psychology, never had any exposure to psychology. I'm not one of these 560 points type person that went into psychology, which is, it's a real shout out to people that are doing their Leaving Cert now who are really unclear about their career or their choices or what they want to do, because so many things aren't measured, such as compassion and empathy and teamwork and curiosity, creativity. None of these things are measured in our current Leaving Cert. So off I went as a 19-year-old, and really I was, on the wards in a general hospital, I worked with veterans from World War I at that time and World War II later on. I was over 10 years. I worked in intensive care and critical care. And that, my nursing background gave me actually a lot of insight into, you're seeing people in a different way in both the physical care environment and nursing, in a very vulnerable situation, life and death, truly was, because I was working in critical care and their families. But then it was only like in my mid to late 20s that I discovered psychology. And I went, I was thinking of going down the education route. And I'm thinking, no, that's the route for me. And I went through the Open University and then City University and UCD, where I did my clinical psychology. I came back in Ireland in 1997. So I had 12 years there and a year in America in the middle of there. But just, I think it's a lot of Irish people, a lot of people around the world obviously have, but an empathy chip. It's a very important thing, a capacity to, when somebody's struggling, to put your hand out and say, how can I help? And I think when I came through in my psychology career, in fact, in my early psychology career, people say, oh, don't tell anyone you're a nurse. Now I'm very proud to say that because it forms, it gives me great understanding, capacity to connect with people. People tell you very challenging or vulnerable about their vulnerability, their trauma, developed an interest in trauma and those experiences that people have had, and then supporting somebody in a very different way, more a psychological holding.
Mm. I'm curious, why would they have told you not to mention that you were a nurse?
Yeah, I think it was almost, you know, I think there was maybe a prestige thing and they were, you know, don't reveal your background or something like that, that you came through this background. But I was fortunate that other people like in the university were very cognizant of my journey and saw that there was a strength here and we could bring this into the program because there's a whole area of psychology called health psychology, which looks at diabetes, heart disease, oncology, chronic pain. And there's now, like in the last number of decades, we're more and more aware of the psychological impact of physical illness as well.
There's a plan to overhaul, there's a bill to overhaul Ireland's mental health laws, and it's been approved for publication after lots of delays. What do you think, having come at it from all the interesting angles that you have and the work that you do at the coalface of mental health in Ireland, what do you think we need most? And it's a big question, but like, how do we get to a place where we have confidence in our mental health system?
Well, if I can talk about children's services first, because that's a very complicated area. At the moment, we've created that there's almost three doors for families. There's a disability, there's primary care and CAMHS. And what we have is children and families who are falling between the stools of different services. And what we need to get to is a unified children's service where you have a single point of access. That is, it's a child and family model, not necessarily a medical model, even though medical inputs have a very important input, that it's there's one person accountable. There's a broader group of clinicians that are, it's more integrated. There's key workers and support families through the system. And then a broader group of people who are in that service supporting it. It needs to be deeper and wider in terms of counsellors, art, music, play therapists. I actually think a lot of the children's services should be aligned with the schools. And it's not about the schools taking on more and more. Absolutely not about that. But I believe the school facilities could be used. So, for example, if I'm working with young teenagers, you might do that more on a five-a-side football, you know, interactivity piece. And then on the AstroTurf or something of the school, it's sort of, I'm thinking of more engaging ways of connecting with young adults, having those type of settings.
Is it a money issue, do you think? Like, is it just lack of resources or is it a rethink?
It's a rethink required because we're really operating in a 20th century, even a 19th century model into our 21st century care. And when it comes to adults, then again, you talked about the mental health law, and really too often when it comes to adults, when we think about mental health, we think about the depression and anxiety, and a very important group, which, you know, there are individuals with significant mental health needs, significant mental health issues. But how we provide care for them, again, is in a very restricted way, I believe. So we need to widen out how we think about supporting on a stepped care approach, on a continuum of care. And then a core question in psychology, like, for example, we've been very deficit focused for many decades. And only in the last 20, 30 years, we're asking what keeps people well. It's real. So partly we need, obviously, early intervention. We need preventative programs. And then we need services for individual when they have high needs and what those services would look like.
Mm. You hear a lot at the moment of parents inquiring about their children, wondering if they're neurodivergent in terms of ADHD or ADD. Are you seeing a lot of that at the moment? And is it because there's just more awareness, so people are looking for help with neurodivergence? Or is it in danger of being a bit of a trend? Are people sort of desperate to attach a label to something?
Yeah, so it's two bits to that, I think, Dermot, for me anyway.
Mm.
I'm always wary of labels anyway, because I believe labels are for tins of beans, not people. But saying that, I think it's to do with society many years ago pushed people aside, and there is a growth of neurodiversity awareness in adults and children. And their challenge for parents is accessing services and accessing interventions and getting support services linked with from the health side and then into the educational side. And so there's a significant needs there. I know I often talk in companies or schools, and we talk about how there's an advantage for neurodiverse or autistic people in different companies, and because of the core skill strengths that they would have in different areas. So I really believe that all of these ADHD, dyslexia, autistic people, it's all basically how our brain is wired, and everybody's brain is wired individually. And I think in time they'll be seen, or individuals will be seen through a neurology component, and it'll be one door rather than, again, all this segmentation that goes on. Every brain in the world is different. So it is.
Yeah.
So when I think of neurodiversity of every brain in the world, and I think there's then individuals will have higher support needs at different ages and stages in their life. And I don't necessarily, I think traditionally psychologists would have worked in a very deficit orientated way. But actually, when you bring compassion to your work, you actually start seeing individuals in a unique way that individuals are. And you then see less of the problems and you see more of the strengths of the individual.
Mm. Finally, Eddie, how about the brains of psychologists? I've met a few over the years from doing this kind of work, and you all seem very funny. And I think there's a big similarity to the other work that I've done, which is stand-up comedy. And I think a lot of psychologists would make great stand-up comics. Discuss.
It's ironic you're asking Eddie Murphy that question, isn't it?
Yeah. Which I'm sure you're delighted that Beverly Hills movie has come back out. And you're like,
you could
coach
me to do stand- You could coach me to do a bit of stand-up, and then I could see. Well, I think it's an observation of human nature, isn't it? Like we're meant to be trained in observing human nature in terms of trying to identify that what might be going on for the individual. And similarly with comedians, they're obviously observe human nature in a way to show whatever satire or comedy or absurdity or whatever way that comedy goes. So maybe it's a new thing. I don't know. I think I'll just stick to the psychology, Dermot. Thank you.
Well, Eddie, we will miss you on Operation Transformation because the show is gone, but hopefully we'll get to see more of you in other spaces as well. And best of luck with all the important work you're doing. Thanks, Eddie.
Thank you very much.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.